With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I am Ryan Wormley, joined today by Pat Fitzmaurice and Andrew Erickson. We are past the NFL draft. It is finally come and gone. No more mock drafts. Now we can do, you know, looking at what's actually happened, except for this is going to be a mock draft because now we're mock drafting for our Dynasty rookie draft, not the actual draft. And we are excited to do so. We're going to go through three rounds today. Superflex rookie mock draft. It is not tight end premium. It is pretty much standard across the board. For the 1QB dynasty managers, we are going to talk a little bit about that throughout the show. So when we hit on quarterbacks, we'll kind of also mention, you know, roughly how far they would drop in our rankings if it was 1QB, where we'd be looking to draft those guys in said format. But this is a Superflex rookie mock draft. Like I said, three rounds. Guys, what did you think of the draft, by the way? Was, you know, obviously Michael Penix was a big takeaway, but Fitz, were there any other picks that really surprised you guys who went earlier or later than you expected?
Oh, man. No, I mean, I was kind of surprised to see Brock Bowers fall out of the top 10, honestly, and then kind of surprised by the fit with the Raiders. Yeah, I'm not sure there was anything. Bo Nix, I did find it kind of hard to grasp that he went top 12.
We didn't want to believe it. We knew it was possible, but when it actually happened, we're like, man, like the Falcons just did Sean Payton such a big favor by taking all the attention with the Penix pick. And then Sean Payton's like, still going to take Bo Nix 12 overall, but we're not going to get ridiculed because, oh my God, this Michael Penix guy went ninth or eighth overall. So Sean Payton came out on top because of that one.
That spin zone immediately coming out from Schefter about how he believed in Bo Nix as much as he believed in Patrick Mahomes was like pretty astonishing stuff. It's almost impressive at that point. All right, let's jump into the actual rookie mock. I have given myself the second pick because I think that's the least interesting, and I want people to hear more from you guys at sort of these pivot points where you could go in a number of different directions. So Fitz will be picking number one, I will be picking number two, Erickson number three, and then we'll go in that order, repeating all the way through 36 picks here. Fitz, start us off at 101, which is not the most interesting decision. We know where you're going to go, but at least dive into it.
Yeah, I'm going to take Caleb Williams here. And in Superflex, I mean, I do think he's the best quarterback in this class. And they have set him up with just this embarrassment of riches at wide receiver with DJ Moore and Keenan Allen for at least a year anyway. And then they get Romo Dunze with pick 109, plus a pretty good tight end in Cole Kmet. So, like, he is set up for success here. And I really believe in the talent. I know maybe some people started to have doubts about Caleb after his final year at USC, when maybe he didn't always play great against tougher opponents, but it just, like, his creativity and ability to make plays on the run is just phenomenal. And in 1QB, I don't know if it would be too early to take him anywhere after the big three wide receivers and Brock Bowers. I'd probably take Xavier Worthy over him in 1QB, but beyond that, there's no running back I'd take ahead of him, and probably not any other wide receiver after Worthy.
It's less likely that you really need a quarterback in 1QB, but there are rosters out there that do need a quarterback. And if you need one and have a relatively high pick, I'd have no problem, even after the big three wide receivers, honestly, if you really were in a position where you have a good roster otherwise. And hey, I know it's only 1QB, but this guy's going to be one of the best, likely. Fitz, I'm curious, you know, you hear a lot of talk about how, and we'll get to JJ McCarthy later, but how he's going to, like, the greatest landing spot a rookie quarterback you could ever imagine in Minnesota. How much behind Minnesota is Chicago as a landing spot for rookie? It's clearly one of the best landing spots for a number one overall pick ever, but just for any rookie quarterback, I mean, you laid out why it's so strong. To me, they're easily on the same tier as Minnesota in terms of where you would have wanted to see a rookie quarterback go.
Totally agree. Neck and neck. I mean, I think you could even make a case that the Chicago situation is possibly a little bit better. I think it's like a dead heat.
Yeah, it's excellent. Erickson, you know, would you have gone a different direction, or is this unanimous? It's Caleb Williams 101.
Yeah, it's Caleb Williams 101 for me as well. And I know that this isn't always like the consensus, because I've seen people doing super flex real drafts and Marvin Harrison Jr. goes first, even in super flex. So I think that's interesting that how highly he is regarded sometimes, even with the quarterback bump with the super flex format, like, some people are still going away from Caleb. But for me, it's still Caleb Williams.
Yeah. The reason I gave myself the number two pick is because I do think that is a tier of two. So I'm going to take Marvin Harrison Jr. If you have a really good quarterback situation, maybe you traded for a pick that turned into the 101 and your team's actually not that bad and you have a bigger need at wide receiver than quarterback, I do think it's justifiable. The only hesitation I had with Harrison when we would do these mock drafts on the Dynasty feed with Bogman, you know, before the NFL draft was, what if New England says we're going to kick the quarterback can down the road and they take him at 103? That didn't happen. He went to a spot with a established quarterback in Kyler Murray. He's going to get a ton of targets. We obviously are believers in the talent. I mean, Fitz and I have been talking like for months now about how anybody who's ever watched a Big Ten game is like knows about Marvin Harrison Jr. Everybody else does too. He's not some hidden secret, but he's just really, 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 really good. And he's in a good landing spot. He's one of the only guys who went to a landing spot where most people are really excited about. There's a lot of like, oh, this landing spot's really interesting for some other players that we'll talk about later in the episode. His is a really good one. I think he's the obvious number two if Caleb Williams goes one. The only times he shouldn't be going number two is if he's going number one. I mean, Erickson, would you agree with that sentiment as far as with the tier goes?
No. I mean, I like Jaden Daniels as number two in Superflex. That's why I have ranked number two in Superflex. So okay. I understand from a, you know, floor capacity, Marvin Harrison Jr. can't miss prospect, but who's ranked higher in Dynasty right now, Anthony Richardson or Puka Nacua? It's Anthony Richardson. He played four games last year. Puka Nacua broke every rookie record for a receiver, and their quarterback is valued more highly. So that's the way I'm kind of looking at it. So in the marketplace, Jaden Daniels' bar that he has to reach is significantly lower than the bar that Marvin Harrison Jr. has to reach. Now, it is a little bit different because Puka was a day three pick, so he doesn't kind of come with that, oh, he was the fourth overall pick, just you're baking that in with Marvin Harrison. But that's something that I kind of looked at was, I mean, if Jaden Daniels averages 20 points per game, rushes for touchdowns, even if he doesn't play the entire season, he could get hurt. I mean, if he's viewed in any way, shape, or form like Anthony Richardson as the number two overall pick, I mean, I feel like you're going to have a lot of dynasty value on your hands with Jaden Daniels as well.
All right, Fitz. Well, Erickson shot me down pretty quickly there. Do you agree with me that Harrison is kind of clearly in this top two, you know, tier one amongst these rookies? Because I'm scared about Jaden Daniels just like staying healthy. I know we just saw this with Anthony Richardson, like Erickson alluded to, but to me, like there's still a gap there.
Totally understand what you're saying, Warren, because I do think Harrison is pretty foolproof and Jaden Daniels might not be, but I actually did just take Jaden Daniels at 102 in the Kings Classic Dynasty League rookie draft. I just had more of a pressing need at quarterback in that league, less of a need at wide receiver. So I was comfortable enough to maybe a little bit of FOMO too with Jaden Daniels in case he is the next great running quarterback who's just this Konami code phenomenon who's putting up 25 points every week. Didn't want to miss out on that.
I guess, you know, I'm the one going out on a limb here. Maybe I shouldn't have put myself second thinking it would be the easy, obvious choice. Erickson, it sounds like it's an easy choice for you at 103.
Yeah, it's going to be Jaden Daniels for me.
And it just along the same lines of the running quarterback is just too valuable. And the landing spot, obviously, like, you know, there are problems in Washington, but he does get Terry McLaurin, maybe bounce back from Jahan Dotson. There's some talent there, too.
Yeah, some good talent. There are some question marks about the tackle position that the Commanders just didn't really do anything about in the NFL draft. So I'm kind of interested to see maybe there's like, hey, he can move. So we're not worried about him getting banged up. He never really got banged up in the pocket at college. It was always him like running and then just taking these like massive shots from college defenders. So, yeah, I mean, the injuries are always going to be somewhat of a concern. But until we see him play in the NFL, we're not going to know. So easy, though, for me at the 103.
Do you see the top three then as a tier, or how would you sort of break that down in terms of where there's now a clear gap in value?
I do. I do think that this is the clear tier. Like I know it was the rhetoric with the other receivers potentially overtaking Marvin Harrison. We just kind of went like full circle. It's like, oh, well, the Arizona Cardinals aren't going to overthink it. Let's not overthink it either. Like he's the clear 101 at receiver and then a non-super flex, like clearly the first pick.
Last question I want to ask you on this sort of, you know, iteration of wide receiver versus quarterback. Obviously, like in Superflex, quarterback is king, as we've already talked about. If you had two good starting quarterbacks, I'm not saying like elite, but like just two like quality, you were happy with them as your starting quarterbacks, but not a third, would you then be willing to go to Marvin Harrison? And it's like only if you need like a second, a guy you're actually going to start, and the depth piece is where you would kind of make the difference. I'm just trying to kind of for for guys out there who have, you know, multiple quarterbacks, but they're not the obvious, like Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes or whatever. So like, how good would those quarterbacks need to be? Particularly, like, is it QB2 versus QB3 where you would consider passing on Daniels for Harrison Erickson?
I think if you have two like QB1s, I think that you can probably do it pretty easily. It's when you're looking at your QB2 and it's like, is this someone like I'm confident playing? Like, am I excited to play this guy every week, or am I like begrudgingly playing this guy every week because he's a quarterback? Like, I think that kind of answers your question a little bit when it's coming to the positional need, a quarterback versus going with the receiver. Like, for example, again, we're going to talk about some of these guys, but I have Stroud and Justin Herbert as my two top quarterbacks in Dynasty League. So I feel pretty good about my top two guys. And then I kind of have like Daniel Jones, Jacoby Brissett, like a bunch of kind of fill-in pieces, mostly for like bye weeks. And I could have taken either Drake May or JJ McCarthy in a Dynasty League, but I chose Malik Nabers because I felt like I don't need those quarterbacks as much as I like need a wide receiver. And that's kind of the next tier for me, as we're going to get into with some of those guys. So to give some real life perspective in a draft I'm actually in, like, that's the route that I went when I felt comfortable with the two quarterbacks I already had on a Superflex roster.
Let's go to that 104. Fitz, who are you taking here with Caleb, Marvin Harrison, and Jaden Daniels off the board?
I am going to take Giants wide receiver Malik Nabers. And another case where I feel like the wide receiver is pretty foolproof and maybe the available quarterbacks are not. And I know the Giants are not the sexiest landing spot for Nabers, maybe not in terms of the quarterback pairing, but I do think Nabers is instantly the high volume target for the Giants. Like, he could see 140, 150 targets if he stays healthy all year.
Was that a difficult decision, or was he kind of the clear choice for you?
Pretty clear for me.
What do you think about that, Erickson? Would that also be the clear choice for you? Or are you, again, given the value of the position, bumping up one of these quarterbacks?
No, I think for me, I mean, the top two quarterbacks for me are firmly Daniels and Williams. And then I feel comfortable like dabbling into the next group of wide receivers, specifically with Malik Nabers. Like, I think he can overcome poor quarterback play, just the amount of volume that he should get in this. I mean, he should see like a 30% target share in this offense. Like, who else are they trying to get the ball to? Like, even in past years, the Giants had Saquon Barkley. Like, they had an offensive piece to get the ball to. Now they don't even have that at the running back position. So Malik Nabers, Brian Daboll, every single week is gonna be like, all right, how do we get the ball to Malik Nabers like 12 times? Because he's gonna be the engine to this offense. And furthermore, if Daniel Jones doesn't play well this year, like, he's gone. And they're gonna be looking for another quarterback. So whether it's, hey, we're going to get Dak Prescott in free agency, or we're going to take the top quarterback in the draft. So you're looking at the Giants quarterback play now, and you're like, oh, I'm kind of concerned, but we could look up next year and be like, oh, now Malik Nabers has this guy at quarterback, whether it's a rookie, whether it's a free agent. So you could see the quarterback play upgrade in a little as 1 year.
Somewhat, I think, pretty close to chalk here so far. I think those will be the first four picks in a lot of leagues. So it does get kind of interesting here how the next four are going to go. I think we are pretty confident in the names of the next group of guys, but the order is a little trickier. I'm going to go against what I had planned to do initially. I'm going to take Drake May, and I know the landing spot is not as good as JJ McCarthy. I really feel this is similar to, and I'm not saying he's on the same talent level as CJ Stroud, but it's similar to me in that he entered his draft season as like kind of the clear number two guy. And by that, I mean like in the fall, he entered that season as the clear number two guy, falls off a bit during the season. Still, obviously, you see a lot of flashes of the talent and what they can do. And then starts to fall in these rookie drafts because of the landing spot. You know, we were talking a year ago about how bad the landing spot in Houston was for CJ Stroud. And now we're talking about how bad the landing spot is in New England. Now, I do think the New England landing spot this year is worse than Houston looked last year. And again, I don't think Drake May is as good as CJ Stroud, but it's similar narratively, at least, to what we saw last year. And I just think May is so talented. I think that he's going to, even if he like sits for a lot of this season, we're talking about dynasty. I'm getting the guy for the long term at a very important position. And I think it's really telling that there was reports that the Vikings offered both first round picks and a first next year to come up and get to the number three pick to try and take Drake May. It did not take nearly that much to go up and get JJ McCarthy like they ultimately did. So even though McCarthy's in the better landing spot, I think the NFL was telling us what they think in evaluating these two guys. I'm taking the uber talented guy, even if I have to be a little patient as they build up that offense around him. I'm going to go with Drake May. Erickson, as a Patriots fan, I'm curious what you think about that.
I hope you're right, number one. I really hope you're right. And this is something that I struggle with, you know, McCarthy versus May, because I'm really trying to, it's hard in my mind to envision, like, is May really going to have a better season than McCarthy? like statistically, like how many games are they each going to play? And I know we talk about, you know, preaching patience and dynasty and looking ahead, but so much what they do in year one impacts how we view them in dynasty. Like if McCarthy comes out and has a really statistically high, throws for 4,000 yards, like 25 touchdowns, like super efficient in a Vikings offense that, again, we talked about earlier, like how great is this landing spot? He's Justin Jefferson as number one receiver. Who's Drake May's number one receiver, potentially a rookie. So that's really tough to get behind, but I do like how you compare it to the Texans where, I mean, maybe if some of these rookies perform above expectation, you could really say, you could really see Drake May, you know, taking off here. I guess the only difference, the other main difference I would point out is I never had any hesitation of CJ Stroud not playing all the games. Like, I always felt pretty confident he was going to play. Like, I don't know how I feel about that with Drake May. Now that could change how the season progresses, but the Patriots have been pretty vocal about, again, preaching patience as well. Like, they wanted to shoot for upside, and they wanted to make sure they could develop a quarterback. So that's the one other thing I would point out about maybe the differences between comparing it to Houston's situation. But I do like your take there.
Fitz, what do you think about that, trying to parse between May and McCarthy as QB3 versus QB4 in this draft?
I do have a slight preference for May just in terms of real life football, being a prospect. I think May would have been my number two in this class ahead of Daniels. But for fantasy, man, it's close enough. Like all those guys, Daniels, May, McCarthy, pretty close for me. And the fact that May's landing spot is pretty bleak for the first year or two in terms of supporting cast, whereas the supporting cast couldn't be better for McCarthy, pushed McCarthy past May for me in fantasy.
And I think that's completely reasonable. Like, this is not an area where I'm like kind of digging my heels in and will say, if you have McCarthy ahead of May, you're wrong. In fact, I think I went on a live stream with Boggs on Friday night during the draft, and he asked me about this, and I think I said McCarthy ahead of May. So I think it's really close, and you can make a really reasonable case in either direction. So Erickson, with May off the board, are you going with the quarterback or one of these other skill position guys?
I'm going to go with Odunze. That's who I'm going to pick, because I guess the way I look at it is this is the cheapest you're ever going to get a receiver drafted in the top 10. Like, this is as cheap as it gets because the target competition is there currently, but we know that Keenan Allen's really only on a 1-year deal. And I mean, you have them attached for their career. So maybe Rome doesn't like play well for like the first like 6 weeks of the season, and then he just turns it on and becomes a monster and becomes Caleb Williams. Like, upside cases, he's Caleb Williams' number one receiver for the next 15 years. Like, that's like really hard to beat when it comes to it. So yes, the quarterback position, like a McCarthy, again, we've already kind of expressed some reservations where they're a step down from that first tier. So I'm going to take all the upside with the Dunes, even if it doesn't hit in week one for me.
How much validity do you see in the parallels to Jackson Smith and Jigba a year ago? Like, steps right in, looks like as a rookie, they're wide receiver three on the depth chart. You know, it is historically tricky. It's not impossible, but it's historically tricky for rookie quarterbacks to support really high level wide receivers. And it's particularly when there's also other mouths to feed in this offense. So Odunze, like, I agree with you that it feels like you'll never get a guy of this talent cheaper. But also, I could see us sitting here a year from now talking about how his value has dropped a bit, like JSN's has, if he has a tough rookie year, just because of what his target share looks like from a rookie quarterback. I mean, what do you think about that, Erickson?
Well, I will say with JSN, yes, his value has dipped, but it hasn't totally been like nuked. Like, he still like has a decent chunk of value, especially when you look at him in like dynasty rankings. It's actually different because he looks way worse in like redraft rankings. So, and it's funny too, because it's Shane Waldron again.
Yeah.
Like, he's the offensive coordinator again in this exact same situation. So you're hoping like, hey man, like, you couldn't get JSN going. What's going to change here with Odunze? I think Odunze offers a little bit more inside outside flexibility. Like, JSN was like, hey, you're playing the slot. Like, that's where you're going to be. Whereas in the Bears offense, it would project more like Keenan Allen probably be in the slot more, or the other guys on the outside with DJ Moore and Rome Odunze. JSN also like broke his wrist before the season started, which a lot of people forget about. And that kind of contributed to like his slower start. And Geno Smith is his quarterback. So I think the other thing is connecting like the long term gain with the Caleb Williams factor. Like, he's going to be the number one receiver, Rome Odunze, Caleb Williams, like, they're going to be connected potentially for their career. So just that, I think, is where that's my selling point. It's like, I don't want to overthink it. Like, he is the number one pick, a generational quarterback prospect with a top 10 receiver, a receiver that was selected in the top 10. And Odunze has, you know, the comps of Devontae Adams, DeAndre Hopkins, like guys that when you think back to year one, weren't necessarily the best. But when we looked up at 1 or 2 years in, oh, now they're the best receivers in the NFL. So that's kind of the way I see it.
Fitz, you can let us know who you're taking at 107, but I am curious if you would have also gone with Odunze at 106.
I think I would have gone with the guy I'm going to take, which is J.J. McCarthy. And I do like Odunze. I mean, it's not so much that I'm worried about the rookie output. I think we know he's going to have his targets kind of capped a little bit with Keenan Allen and DJ Moore around. And by the way, speaking of the JSN thing, I was just doing a Q&A session in the Fantasy Pros Discord, and one of our users was offered JSN for the 201 in a super flex rookie draft. That's a smash accept, right?
For you, it would guys? Be for me.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe we do see Odunze devalued a bit like that, but I don't think it would be because Odunze isn't good. It's just because the target competition is going to be so fierce for him. So, but yeah, 107, I'll stop the slide of McCarthy. Since we've talked about him, where do you guys put the next three quarterbacks in Caleb after Caleb? So Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy in terms of one QB drafts.
I'll go first and just say, for me, like, Jaden Daniels is probably, I mean, he is the one I'm most interested in because that, you know, running ability is even more of a separator in one QB, where I every quarterback decision I make in a one quarterback dynasty league is who has the guy who has the best chance to be a top five asset, because that is how you're going to separate yourself more so than in Superflex, where having multiple quality guys is sometimes just as important as having that one elite guy. So I like Daniels is the one that I would be like considering like second half of the first round. The other guys, like particularly given the landing spot for May, I'm probably not considering until the first part of round two in one QB league, because there's so many good wide receivers I like. What do you think, Erickson?
Yeah, so I have Williams and Daniels 5 and 6 in one quarterback league. So just the receivers are going ahead of them. And then Drake May and McCarthy, I have, yeah, like middle of the second round.
What do you think, Fitz?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I've got, I think I have Caleb after Worthy, Daniels right after, I think, Ladd McConkey, and yeah, right after Ladd. And then the other guys, May and McCarthy in the early second.
At the 108, I'm going to make what I think is going to be, outside of like Caleb number one, probably the most common player spot thing you're going to see in drafts, which is Brock Bowers at 108. I understand. I'm not confused why he has sort of fallen to the back end of this tier of the top eight that we talked about a lot, Fitz. And for some people, has actually fallen even beyond that. I understand why. I don't agree with it. I don't think this landing spot is as terrible as it's been made out to be. I get that it was a surprise to people because, I mean, nobody projected the Raiders to take Brock Bowers. But I don't think it's actually that bad. I think he's very clearly one of the three best pass catchers on the team already. I'm not worried about Michael Mayer. If anything, I like that they have a tight end who can handle maybe more of the dirty work and some of the blocking and, you know, be that second tight end that kind of covers some of the areas of weakness for Bowers, and Bowers can essentially just be their slot receiver. I get that there's a quarterback question in Vegas. That to me is the biggest concern. But as far as the other guys on this offense, I'm not worried at all. Luke Getsy will use tight ends. Like, I think if you are a believer in the talent as we were going into this draft season, there's no reason to drop him. Now, maybe you could say some other guys have risen, like J.J. McCarthy, because he is in such a good landing spot that maybe he's sort of, you know, leapfrogged over Bowers. But to me, I'm not dropping my evaluation of Bowers at all, given the landing spot, even if it wasn't the best possible one. I think this is far from the worst landing spot. Now, Fitz, I know based on your rankings that you agree in having Bowers at 8. Erickson, it looks like you disagree. You have him a few spots lower.
This is the worst landing spot he could have gone to. I hate it. I hate that he's on the Raiders, because to me, they talked about how they took best player available, which to me seems like, okay, do we actually we didn't have a plan for this guy, because we didn't think he was going to be there. But like, oh, now we have him. Oh, so now let's figure out what we have to do with him. So for me, that's concerning because they mentioned in the presser with Tom Telesco as a hybrid player. That to me is looking at Luke Getsy and putting him in a position, right? Hey, we have all these toys. Go figure it out. Did Luke Getsy figure it out with Justin Fields? No. The quarterback issue, Aiden O'Connell, Gardner Minshew. That's what we're hoping facilitates multiple fantasy pieces are productive in this offense. Devontae's still there. He's still going to command a high target share in this offense. Jacoby Myers was really good last year. Tom Telesco was on the record saying, I love Michael Mayer. We love him as a player. And now we're going to add in a tight end that also plays slot that has to be used the right way. I can just see this going so poorly so easily. And for me, that's why I'm like, I don't want to, we do this with tight ends all the time. He's a weapon. He can beat safeties. He's faster than linebackers. And then they don't get used the right way because they don't land in the right spot. So yeah, I'm out on Bowers. Like at this spot in rookie mocks, like I just don't see how he's going to burn me. Like, am I going to really look up and be like, wow, the Raiders uses him exactly the way he was used at Georgia and it was perfect. Is that really going to happen? I'm just very skeptical of that happening.
Well, I want to get Fitz's opinion. The other thing I'll say on the quarterback, though, is rookie tight ends, unless you're Sam LaPorta, often you're not drafting a rookie in Dynasty for that first year anyway, typically, given their development curve. So I am assuming that they will address quarterback by, you know, year two of Bowers' career. And even still, like somebody like Minshew is like, I think capable enough. Because I do think he will be tight end one on this team. I don't really care about the quote that they love Michael Mayer. Like, what else are they supposed to say? Like, they hate the guy? I mean, this wasn't the regime that drafted Mayer. They just drafted an elite tight end prospect. Like, I'm not worried. I'll put it like this. I already had Odunze before the draft ahead of Bowers. If I didn't have that, I don't hate this landing spot enough to flip it. Because, like, we expected Odunze to go to Chicago. That's not a surprise. This surprise landing spot is not bad enough for me to change things too drastically. I mean, Fitz, you know, where I can see in your rookie rankings you have him eighth. Is that a clear eighth? Is he still in this upper tier? Is he closer to the top seven than, you know, nine and beyond? Where are you at on Bowers in this landing spot?
Clear eights, and in tight end premium, I'd consider taking him over Odunze. And I do get some of Erickson's concerns, but this is Dynasty. We get a longer runway with these players. We have time for the Raiders to straighten out their quarterback situation and for the situation to get maybe a little bit better. I'm not worried about Michael Mayer as any sort of impediment to Brock Bowers. Plus, he's an early declare. He's a young guy, and Erickson talked about the right way to use Brock Bowers. I don't know if there's a wrong way. Can line him up in line.
Luke Getsy will find a way.
In line, in the slot, in the backfield, out wide. Like, this guy's just an athletic freak. I think he's going to shine almost no matter what they do with him. So yeah, I'm pretty confident putting him in eight.
I have the eighth pick in a number of my rookie drafts, and I'm like going to be very happy to take Bowers. The only annoying thing is it's just kind of fun to diversify, and I was excited to see, oh, maybe McCarthy will get there. Maybe Odunze will get there. Now it's like it's going to be Bowers is going to be there, I am assuming, in all these drafts, but I'm still happy to take him. Like, I still think he's a very good value at 108, even with the landing spot. So, Erickson, you obviously are going to get one of your top eight players here at nine since Bowers is not in that group. So who are you taking at 109?
I'm taking Xavier Worthy, Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver, because it's so weird with Worthy because I feel like his stock got hurt because he broke the 40-yard dash record. So now people can compare him to John Ross, when to me, it's like Worthy was so much more than his 40-yard dash. Like, I wish he ran like a 4.4, just like some like average time, like, oh, like he's a fast receiver. Like, that's fine. But everyone keeps comparing him to all the receivers that just busted that were really fast. But when you compare those guys to Worthy, he was so much better at college as a receiver and like as a punt returner. So I'm not trying to overthink this. Like, the Chiefs have been looking for this dynamic Tyreek Hill, DeSean Jackson-esque player with Patrick Mahomes. And I think Xavier Worthy can be that guy. So I like Worthy over Brian Thomas and McConkey.
So Fitz, we're clearly entering a stretch where it's going to be a lot of these receivers that went in the back half of the first round in the real draft and then early in the second round. We talked a lot in the Dynasty feed going into this draft process about how once you get past the top, you know, seven or eight picks, it's really going to be a lot of A, you know, personal preference, and B, landing spot. I don't know that the landing spot's cleared up actually that much for me, because I think there are really interesting cases to be made for a lot of these different receivers, both for and against them, given the landing spots. Worthy is one, though, where I think it's clearly like a case to be made. I'm a big fan of his. I think he is kind of elevated above the rest of this group. I can see in the sheet that you're taking another receiver here. Would Worthy have been ahead of the guy that you take?
He would have been, and he was actually pre-draft. I had Worthy at number 4. And obviously the landing spot enhances it greatly. Not enough to push him past Odunze, but this is just such a great landing spot. And I think, Erickson, you can attest to this. We were talking about like draft fits on a show a couple months ago, and I mentioned Worthy as a possibility to the Chiefs and how much they value speed. Like, this is just such a dream pairing. Give the mad scientist Andy Reid the really fast guy and let Patrick Mahomes go to work. It's going to be fun to watch.
And now what receiver are you going to go with here at 110?
I'm going to go with the safe play. I think Ladd McConkey. I know the Chargers are expected to be run heavy with Jim Harbaugh calling the shots overall and Greg Roman calling the plays, but Ladd's pretty safe. Great route runner. I think he's probably, I think in year one, it's probably like a 1A, 1B as the target leader, maybe between Ladd and Josh Palmer. So I think it's a decent spot, even though they might be a little, well, a lot run heavy.
Yeah, the Greg Roman offense does concern me here, even though there's obvious path to targets. Erickson, where do you have Ladd McConkey ranked?
So I have him right behind Worthy. So I actually have him as my wide receiver 5. And I think McConkey, I think his situation is interesting because when you look at his college, you know, career, a lot of injuries, but really efficient, like on a per route run basis. He was top 5 in yards per route run last year. So the concerns with him are, oh, can he maintain his health? Well, in a run heavy offense, like he's less likely to just, you know, sustain so many hits, right? Because he's only going to get tackled so many times every time there's a passing attempt. So I think that his like market share numbers, like target share, yards per route run, like those are going to look really good. And that's what people look at when we're looking at evaluating players year over year. Like, oh, what was his yards per route run? Like, how efficient was he? We really don't bring up counting stats as much when we're talking about players like values. So even if he misses a couple games here and there, I just find it really hard to believe him not having a super efficient season where he's posting really high target share. So even if we look up, he's like, oh, he was like wide receiver 36 and overall, but his points per game is really good. His yards per route run is really good because he's going to be the number one target for Justin Herbert, who I think may not, again, throw for 5,000 yards, but I think he's going to be really efficient in an offense that's going to be able to run the football effectively, use play action. So I think McConkey, even if he gets banged up, I think he's going to have value that carries over really highly into next year as well.
Quick note on the Dynasty Draft Kit. Whether you're starting fresh or getting ready for your rookie draft, dive deep into Dynasty prep with our 2024 Dynasty Draft Kit at fantasypros.com/dynasty. Get access to our expert rankings, rookie draft advice, mock drafts, and much more. You can also join live expert AMAs on our Discord at fantasypros.com/chat. Dominate your Dynasty League with our Dynasty Draft Kit at fantasypros.com/dynasty. I am on the clock here at 111. There are 3 names I am debating between. I'm going to go with the guy that I know Fitz quite likes, and that's Keon Coleman. Now, not everybody on the Fantasy Pro staff likes Coleman. I kind of see the cases for both sides of him as a player. The landing spot is sublime. There is a very clear path to being one of the 2 favorite targets for Josh Allen this season just as a rookie. When you watch, you know, what Keon Coleman did at Florida State, some of those highlight reel plays were really exciting. He seems like the type of receiver that will thrive paired with Josh Allen. Obviously, he endeared himself to everybody with those, you know, early comments at the press conference about getting the jacket at Macy's and envisioning himself scoring touchdowns and asking for a cookie from the snack. I mean, he was just, it was an amazing press conference to introduce himself to the fans of Buffalo. And it just makes you a fan of the guy, but also really talented player. We know the basketball background, having played at Michigan State. And again, getting paired with an elite quarterback who's, it seems to fit his skill set, and there's a clear path to targets. I get that he's somewhat divisive of a player. Debro has not come around and still does not like Coleman. But Fitz, I'll toss it to you because I know you quite like Coleman, and I'm assuming you like this pick here.
Mike Evans with training wheels. Not an elite separator, but just a contested catch artist and a bully, a guy who can just win physical battles against most of the cornerbacks he's going to be facing. I do love this matchup, and obviously big need for Buffalo getting another receiver, especially a big bodied one, with the other guys being like Curtis Samuel and Khalil Shakir. So the only reason I don't have him ahead of Ladd McConkey, I really wish they were going to be able to play Keenan Coleman as a big slot, and instead they have announced that they plan to use him as a conventional outside X receiver, which, you know, not bad. I think he can make that adjustment, but I think he could just dominate right off the bat as a big slot. So, yeah, love the pick. I think he's a first-round value even in super flex drafts.
Yeah, and I wasn't taking him in the first round of our pre-draft mocks, but now seeing the landing spot again and you know, that Buffalo didn't add anybody else as a serious threat, I'm all over this in the back end of the first round. Erickson, 112, who's your last pick of the first round?
I'm going to go with Brian Thomas Jr., wide receiver for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I just like the upside play. I get that the floor might be a little bit shaky with the pass catches that are kind of entrenched there, but I mean, if Trevor Lawrence is launching the ball downfield, like, it's probably going to be Brian Thomas. Like, Christian Kirk and Evan Engram, we know, are the underneath options for him. Gabe Davis still trying to get targets on the outside ever since that playoff game. So I'll take Brian Thomas here. First round pick, Jacksonville. I like it.
Yeah, Fitz, you know, before we wrap up our discussion in the first round, I'm curious what you think about Thomas, because for a while there, he was everybody's wide receiver four behind the big three. And in some of our early mocks with Bogman, he was kind of the easy pick at the 109. Obviously drops a little. He's still paired with a very talented quarterback. And I know there are mouths to feed in that offense, but they're not the scariest mouths. Like, it's not that he's stepping into an offense with a ton of elite pass catchers that he needs to overcome to become a top target for Trevor Lawrence. I mean, to me, he's still clearly a first round pick in rookie drafts. What do you think about Thomas?
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of elite pass catchers there, but a lot of competent pass catchers there. I mean, Christian Kirk, you've got a tight end who caught more than 100 passes last year with Evan Engram. You've got, you know, Gabe Davis, who they brought over, which to me is almost like Brian Thomas seems redundant with Gabe Davis. I think they're both going to be like vertical shot play guys in year one. And then Zay Jones, who's always kind of underrated and works his way into the mix. So I don't love the landing spot. And I don't know what to make about Brian Thomas. Hard to judge him when he played with Malik Nabers and played with a Heisman Trophy winner in Jaden Daniels. Although the last time we had questions like that about an LSU receiver, it was Justin Jefferson playing alongside Ja'Marr Chase and with Joe Burrow. That turned out pretty well for his career. So maybe I shouldn't be the doubting Thomas guy.
Worth noting, too, that Zay Jones was released today by the Jaguars.
Oh, was he? Yeah. I missed that.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. So he's gone. So they're already making room to get,
yes, I guess,
Gabe Davis's cardio.
Yeah. I get why a guy like Worthy or Coleman or McConkey, like, the cases for all those guys to have, you know, jumped ahead of Brian Thomas. But to me, this landing spot is not such that I'm knocking him out. He's not getting out of the first round in rookie drafts that I'm in. I think he's too talented for that, and paired with a very good quarterback. A quick recap of round one. From 1 to 12, Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison Jr., Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, Drake May, Rome Odunze, J.J. McCarthy, Brock Bowers, Xavier Worthy, Ladd McConkey, Keon Coleman, and Brian Thomas. So we're on a run of four straight receivers to end the first round. Fitz, you are on the clock with 201.
All right, I'll break the seal on running backs with Jonathan Brooks. A lot of people's number one. Like, he wasn't at the beginning of the process my running back one pre-draft, but I kind of changed my mind and came around to that. I don't love that he's coming off a November ACL tear. Maybe he's not ready for the start of the season, but seems pretty clear that Jonathan Brooks is going to be the Panthers running back of the future. And even though this is a work in progress, the Panthers offense is, but you know, I think Brooks can grow with this offense and just best raw tools probably of any running back in this class.
Yeah, I like Brooks quite a bit. I considered him with my last pick in the first round, given the landing spot. It's a landing spot that Debro has been talking up for a while now. I think will be most people's RB1, you know, in their rookie drafts, certainly. I'm going to take another running back, Trey Benson, just because I think it does really thin out at the position. I know he didn't get that, you know, round two draft capital that Brooks got, but still early in round three. I like the offense that he's in. I know James Conner is there. I don't know how many, you know, more years left James Conner has of being a high quality running back. So I really like the long-term play with Benson. I think he's a talented guy too. There are some people who like him maybe better than others, but given that, you know, all my favorite receivers are off the board and there are still a lot of kind of next tier down receivers that I like and can be confident will still be there in my next pick, I'm going to go with Benson here for, you know, for the 202. Now, Erickson, before you give us the 203, I'm curious, Brooks, Benson, is this the right range for these first couple of running backs to be going?
Yeah, I mean, there's really not. This is one of these years where you want to have a running back that you want to draft in rookie drafts because you can get them at the beginning of the second round. And Benson and Brooks, I just don't see where their value is not. I mean, in my overall dynasty rankings, they're both top 20 running backs. Like, you're getting a top 20 running back in your rookie draft, like just like that. And it's like, yeah, because yes, there are obstacles they have to overcome this year. But 2025, we're going to look up Jonathan Brooks, RB1 for the Panthers, Trey Benson, RB1 for the Arizona Cardinals. Like I feel like that's like cemented in stone. Like that's going to happen. Now, how do we get there? We'll see how things play out this year with Brooks coming off his injury. You have Trey Benson who's still behind James Conner, but it's pretty clear that these guys are wheels up for 2025 and it is dynasty. So especially with them probably getting ramped up at the end of this season and like contributing to fantasy winning rosters. I mean, I like both these running backs here. And I also considered even going either of them over Brian Thomas at the end of the first round. So if you need a running back, you want to make sure you have picks at the end of the first round, beginning of the second round, where you can snag one of these guys and you're going to have a starting running back sooner rather than later on your roster.
If you are a team that has done a wide receiver heavy build and have a real need at running back, and let's say you have like the 10th or 11th pick, you know, in the first round, if you have a need, would you consider taking one of those guys over like Thomas or McConkey or Coleman or whoever? Or those receivers are just too good that even if you don't have a need at receiver and you do it running back, you're still going with the receiver?
I mean, you're definitely just taking on more risk because, you know, when the receivers are protected a little bit by draft capital, but at the same time, like one of these guys could be Quentin Johnston and they just lose all of it because they don't show up in year one, even if they have the opportunity to do so. So they're not all going to hit. Whereas, I mean, are both Benson and Brooks going to bust? Probably not. I'd say at least one of them is probably going to hit this year. So yeah, I think that you can, especially on the back end. Like obviously like the big guys, I would even say Worthy is probably someone I don't want to pass up on. But McConkey probably has a really safe floor. But if like, hey, I'm dying at running back, you know, I don't necessarily hate that going after that position. And again, be active in your rookie drafts, like trade down. Because you know that at the end of the first round, beginning of the second round, this is where these running backs are typically going to be drafted. So prepare ahead of time, get these picks so you can then draft one of these running backs.
Yeah, this like 110 to 204 range is a great spot to trade down this year because I think there's a lot of cases to be made for a lot of these guys. But if you have a personal preference, like there's not a lot separating them either. Erickson, who's the 203?
So for me, I'm going to go with Xavier Leggett. From Carolina, first round pick. And eventually one of these Carolina Panthers receivers is going to hit. These super ultra athletic guys from the SEC, Terrace Marshall bust, Jonathan Mingo bust, third time's a charm, right? So we're going to go with Xavier Leggett, first round pick for the Carolina Panthers.
He was a first round pick, fits, not somebody that we were like the highest on in our pre-draft process in the dynasty feed, but getting that capital and having a very obvious path to targets, you know, from a quarterback who has pedigree and might look a lot better in year two, hopefully, you know, with Dave Canales on board. Do you like that pick?
Well, the Panthers were really excited about him trading up one spot to get him. Boy, like, I have no idea what to make of Xavier Leggett, honestly, a guy who didn't break out until he was a fifth-year senior in college, but at the same time, a pretty extraordinary physical specimen, and I believe he was a converted high school quarterback, so that might explain sort of the long ramp up for him as far as his college career.
Who's your pick here at 204, Fitz?
I'm going to go with Bo Nix here, and I know our own Thor Nystrom pretty much does not like Bo Nix very much as a prospect and notes that, you know, he threw more screen passes, I think, in his college career than JJ McCarthy had pass attempts in 2023. But man, like if there's anyone who can make this type of thing work, you have to think it's Sean Payton, who, you know, Drew Brees did not have a rocket arm. And maybe this can be Drew Brees light for Sean Payton. The poor man's Drew Brees, and he's a more mobile version of Drew Brees, I think. So I don't know. I don't love the pick, but if you have a needed quarterback, I think this is the portion of the draft where it's okay to take Bo Nix.
In a 1QB league, I don't know that I would take Nix in the top three rounds. Obviously, this is Superflex, so I think it's a reasonable pick here. Would you agree with that, or do you think in like part of round three? Okay, so even past round three. I don't think any outside of that those top four quarterbacks I'm even considering until three rounds are done. Erickson, 1QB, Bo Nix, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather draft like one of these running backs over Bo Nix in a one quarter. Look, the last time I saw the fifth quarterback drafted in the first round, his name was Mac Jones. And I mean, again, like I just, I get in Superflex, like, yes, he's going to start games. He's going to be someone you can play. But I guess my only concern is like the value of him. Like who's high on him besides Sean Payton? Like, is anyone high on him in your league? Like how much trade value is he actually going to have as a quarterback? Like, I guess that would be my concern. Even if he starts.
The value like, is a starting quarterback in a Superflex league. That's the value. I don't think there's really like, much of a case.
I guess
for
like
on
for
that.
Me, it's, is he just going to be like viewed as like a Derek Carr? Like, and it's like, you can't really ever get a lot for him, or it's just like, hey, he's just better on my roster, 'cause I can get something from him. So,
yeah, I am on the board and I'm going to take the final first round wide receiver, Ricky Pearsall, surprise first round guy. The case against is quite obvious, right? It's that there are, if we're talking about mouths to feed in some of these other offenses in San Francisco, it's insane, especially because we didn't get a trade of one of those receivers, you know, those incumbent guys. So I totally get the case against. However, I think the talent is very, very real. I loved Pearsall as a second round target in rookie drafts prior to the draft, and he got first round capital. I know the landing spot has its warts, but it's also got its positives. He's with an elite offensive play caller who will put him in good positions to succeed when he's on the field. Debo has not always been healthy. Brandon Ayuk might not get the contract. There are still paths, you know, Kittle is starting to age. Christian McCaffrey, how many elite years as a pass catcher does he have left? Again, there's a lot of really, really good, you know, talent in this offense. So I totally get the case against, but I think the player is too talented. The offense is too good and the draft capital is too enticing for me to let him slide too much further. Fitz, I'm curious your opinion on Pearsall.
Like him a lot, and I'm not too worried that he does not have a real clear path to targets right away. Like, I think that will sort of sort itself out, and by year two, I think Pearsall is going to be an important component of that offense. I like him a lot. I like the player. Crazy athleticism. The 42-inch vertical jump from Ricky Pearsall, and he's fast and he's quick. And I mean,
one of the best catches you'll ever see on his highlight.
Oh my goodness.
Reel.
And he just got murdered on that catch too. Like, yeah. So he's a fun player. You know, it's not the perfect landing spot, but it's not enough to sour me on the player at all.
Erickson, you are on the board at 206.
Going to go with everyone's favorite pick, Michael Penix, the Atlanta Falcons.
I was wondering when we were going to see this. I mean, quarterback drafted top 10.
I mean, look,
10.
he's going to be exactly like, zoom out, quarterback in the top 10, middle, second round of a super flex draft. I think that's valuable there. Look, I don't know what the Falcons are doing necessarily, but I think there's some credence to, dude, if Michael Penix looks better than Kirk Cousins does, like, that's the guy who's going to play. Like, I don't know. Like, I just, there's something about their obsession with Penix. They went to Seattle to work him out, and they're like, oh my God, like, we give Kirk Cousins all this money, but we love this guy like so much. So I think this is the cheapest time to get him. I think that it's more negatively impactful on Kirk Cousins' dynasty value than Penix, but they're kind of both being like discounted as a result of the draft pick and where it went and all the hubbaloo that kind of like accompanied it. But at the end of the day, he's a top 10 pick at quarterback, and he's ready to go and play now. Even if they talk about, oh, we can wait 4 to 5 years. I really don't think that's, I don't know why they said that. I think that he actually can play like right away. He is 25 years old. So yeah, I think this is a spot where I see a teardrop off of at the receiver position. Cause again, like you said, you took the last guy that went in the first round. So I think for now I feel comfortable going in the quarterback pool.
Fitz, you know, jokes about the Falcons aside, and the memes were flying on Thursday night. Again, quarterback taking eighth overall in a super flex. There's a lot of talent on the offense around him. Like, if Kirk Cousins hadn't been signed there, I think we'd be all be really excited about Penix, regardless of your evaluation of him as a player. Cousins is older, coming off an Achilles tear, and you know, there's a lot of talk about how they can get out of that contract maybe in 2 years. I think middle of the second round is a really reasonable spot for Penix.
And there's a lot to like about Penix. I mean, I know the injury history is troublesome, but he has a great arm, like an above average arm for an NFL starter. I don't know if there's 16 starters in the NFL with better arms than Penix. And he's great at sack avoidance, which maybe is what happens when you tear your ACL twice and have some major shoulder injuries. But I like it. And, you know, I've always thought Kirk Cousins was a better fantasy player than real life quarterback. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Penix in there. It's not going to take 4 years for Penix to be the Falcons starter.
Where, just quickly, would you take him in one QB?
Oh, that's harder. Somewhere in the third round, maybe, like late third round.
So you wouldn't take Bo Nix in the first three rounds, but you would take Penix, but you took Nix higher?
Yeah. No, I
get that from in a sense where, like,
more upside for Penix.
You've got to build
right.
upside. Yeah, yeah. I think it's fair. I was just confirming. I actually think that's a reasonable stance.
The appeal in Superflex is that, I mean, not every team is going to have three starting quarterbacks in a 12-team Superflex league, and Nix is going to play right away. But in a one QB league where you're just looking for bench guys who have higher upside, I think Penix makes a little more sense. Like, I'd take him ahead of Nix in one QB for sure.
Yeah. I wasn't trying to play like gotcha, by the way. Like, I just wanted to confirm for the audience, because I think that is a reasonable stance. Eric,
yeah,
totally. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, I think it's fair to rank quarterbacks differently in two quarterbacks. Because, like, you, the Derek Carrs of the world, again, keep bringing up Derek Carr. He's my guy, of course. Bringing up a player like that where he just starts games, like, that's super valuable in two quarterbacks. Even if he's only scoring like 15 points per game, like, that's still super valuable. But in one quarterback leagues, you do not want that. Like, that's killing your roster if you're starting a quarterback that can only get 15 points every single week. But in two quarterback leagues, that's super valuable. So, yeah, I definitely understand that. Because, like, Penix and Nix, I mean, they're on the polar opposites of, like, how their careers are projecting. Like, Penix, you're, like, all about the future and all these contingencies, whereas Bo Nix is, like, he's locked in day one, and we'll see how Sean Payton can – we'll see how far this guy can go.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boost, and so much more. 76ers-Knicks is just a 4-point spread tonight. Looks like the most fun game on the slate to me. However you plan to bet that one, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code FANTASYPROS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code FANTASYPROS only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm not guarding like that, CJ.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fitz, at our sort of, you know, theoretical 106 drafter, has Rome Odunze and Michael Penix Jr. pairing together some college teammates. It looks like you're about to do the same at the 107, who took J.J. McCarthy in round one.
Yeah, Team Ann Arbor, team number seven is. So it's going to be J.J. McCarthy along with Blake Corum. I thought Corum was maybe, he and Jonathan Brooks, I thought were the best pure runners in this RB class. And I like the landing spot, actually, even though Kyren Williams is there. I'm not sure whether Sean McVay is going to make this like a tag team or if it's going to be Corum as a straight backup to Kyren Williams. But either way, Kyren Williams didn't hold up last year. He missed games. And if Blake Corum gets in there with Kyren Williams out, obviously, like, Blake Corum is going to be inside the top 10 of our weekly rankings at running back. So immense upside here. And maybe if McVay does decide to save a little bit of wear and tear on Kyren Williams, like, maybe immediate playability for Corum.
Erickson, I know the running backs have been kind of difficult to rank throughout. Those top two seem a little bit more obvious after the NFL draft. Do you think Corum is the right guy as RB3?
Yeah, that's where I have. I have the top two in there, the first tier, and then I think Corum's kind of in a tier of his own, honestly. I think because you can look at any of these rookie running backs like, oh, well, if there's an injury, like, this guy can smash. But I feel the most confident that if Corum got a chance to be the Rams RB1, he'd be putting up top 12 numbers, because I think that he can do everything that Kyren Williams can do. Like, I don't think that their games are very different. Sean McVay said that after they drafted Corum. He's like, yeah, like, he reminds you a lot of Kyren Williams. And anyone that watches Corum is like, they do the same thing. Like, they're not super explosive athletes, but they do everything well. Like, they can do everything well. So I think that Corum makes sense from a contingent upside standpoint. If Kyren can't hold up, if he gets a bell cow workload, Corum could definitely smash like he did at Michigan for 2 years.
I am on the clock with a 208. I'm going to take A.D. Mitchell. I think that his fall is a little bit overblown in terms of, like, people thought he was maybe a first round guy. You may be wide receiver 5 off the board. He fell all the way to the back half of the second round. He fell like, you know, 20 spots from where people were projecting him to go. I recognize that as you get higher in the draft, that is more meaningful than it will be lower in the draft. But still, it's not like he fell to day 3 like another receiver who was thought of as, you know, a potential early second round guy. So I like the landing spot in terms of opportunity he'll have. Obviously, the athleticism is freakish, and I'm willing to, you know, in the back half of round 2 of a rookie draft, I'm willing to take the shot on a guy who's going to get an opportunity and who has crazy athleticism and who some people, you know, some of the evaluators in the industry seem to really like, even if he was more divisive based on his actual production at Texas. All right, Erickson, on to you for the 209.
I'm going to go with wide receiver, of course. I'm going to go with Jermaine Burton, receiver for the Cincinnati Bengals. And to me, I look at Burton as someone that I thought would go much later than round 3 because of some off-field concerns. I think he's kind of like discount Ricky Pearsall, where you have a receiver who's currently the number 3 option on his offense, but has the potential to move up to that number 2 role based on a potential trade happening. So again, like Pearsall, whether it's Ayuk, whether it's Debo, one of those guys is going to be moved on from either this year or next year. And you could say the same about the Bengals. Like, T. Higgins is not going to be a Bengal in 2025. I feel pretty confident about that. And maybe he won't even end up being a Bengal this year. So Jermaine Burton steps in potentially as at least the number 3 for Joe Burrow. And that's the way I look at it. Like, would I rather have the number 3 receiver, again, also that doesn't have to compete with a tight end for targets, in Jermaine Burton versus Ricky Pearsall? I get Pearsall had the draft capital, but before they both got drafted, these guys were in the same tier, Jermaine Burton and Ricky Pearsall. So again, you could have liked one more than the other, but I was really excited about Burton's landing spot and the fact that he went in round three despite all the off-the-field concerns. I know he was off some NFL draft boards altogether, but imagine if he didn't have any off-the-field issues. Would he have been a round two pick? Could he have gone in the first round? Like, I don't know, but I'm willing to find out here, picking here at the end of the second round.
Fitz, what do you think about that pick? And is he the receiver you would have taken instead of who you take here?
He is not the receiver I would have taken. Thor is going to be mad when you say that there's no tight end target competition because he is a big Eric Aall fan. It's interesting. Will, a guy who does have some concerns maybe about, like, you know, possibly wasn't beloved by his coaching staffs in college, how's he going to do sitting on the bench mostly during his rookie year? So I guess we're going to find out.
And who are you taking here?
I'm going to take Roman Wilson, another Michigan guy. Geez, here's me, the Wisconsin Badger fan. Not the biggest fan of the Michigan football program, and I've taken three Wolverines so far. Wilson goes to a great spot where they needed another pass catcher in Pittsburgh to help George Pickens out. And, man, I like Roman Wilson's game. I know he was a big riser during the pre-draft process with a good Senior Bowl and good combine. And the Pittsburgh Steelers seem to know a little something about drafting wide receivers. It seems like they have the Midas touch. Anyone they take turns to gold. Hopefully that's the case with Roman Wilson.
211. As you get to the back end of the second round, I think it really becomes, you know, eye of the beholder type stuff. And, you know, again, you can make the case for and against a lot of guys in this range. I'm going to ignore the draft day slide on Troy Franklin and take him here. I like that he's paired up with his college quarterback. I think that somewhat to a degree mitigates the fall. Did I miss an update on, like, was there a medical reason why he fell or an off the field reason, or was it still kind of a surprise? Did you guys see anything that I just somehow missed?
I didn't see anything in particular. I think it just might have been that there were other things that just were not on field. And in terms of,
I assume it's like a medical thing that we weren't aware of when there's a fall, but I haven't seen any kind of reporting on that. I really liked the player at Oregon.
I thought I heard Daniel Jeremiah or someone else at NFL Network say that teams just were pretty dismayed by his combine workout.
Okay. So,
and I think another thing too, people said his play strength wasn't great. They were afraid of the combine and then like the frame. Okay. He's just not a big frame, how will he hold up?
Not a flawless player, but I really liked what I saw at Oregon. I think he's a really good receiver.
And he gets paired with Bo Nix.
Exactly. Being paired with that college QB, like, I'm not worried about him seeing targets when he's on the field. Now, it is Sean Payton. We just saw them go out and get Mims a year ago and then not really use him even when he was really efficient when he was on the field. So, you know, there's definitely red flags, but there's red flags with everybody on the board right now. So a guy who I thought was really talented and, like, clearly a day two type of receiver. And by the way, you know, where he went has been a round three pick in other years. It just so happened that this year 102 was round four, but like some years given comp picks, that is a round three pick. So I'm not going to like say, oh, round three versus round four is such a drastic difference in this scenario, even though it was a full day extra of waiting. So I'm happy to get Troy Franklin in the back end of the second round and take a swing on what I think is a talented guy. Erickson, 212, wrap up the second round for us.
I'm going to go running back. I'm going to go with Jalen Wright for the Miami Dolphins. Miami traded up to get this guy, and he's Devon Achane 2.0. So if one of these Dolphins gets injured, Jalen Wright, baby, here we go.
Yeah, Erickson, tell Jalen Wright that Mr. Achane likes his coffee with cream and sugar. like the idea that he is a threat to Devon Achane's role is just I find it kind of comical. I mean, like, Achane's a special player, and we saw that last year. And Jalen Wright's just like maybe a top five running back in kind of a so-so class. Like, Mike McDaniel needs to fuel this offense that's totally predicated on speed. And I understand wanting to have insurance when the number two guy is pushing like 33 or something with Raheem Mostert. And like, they got lucky and Raheem Mostert didn't sustain any significant injuries last year. But like, I just think they're not counting on that luck holding out with Mostert again, and that's why they needed another guy here. But like, he's not any sort of existential threat to Devon Achane.
So Fitz, is that you saying that you wouldn't have taken him in this range, or you just think that?
No.
Okay. Because I mean, the fit in the offense is obvious aside from the other players in it. Like how Mike McDaniel can use Jalen Wright is pretty enticing. So I do like the upside here, and especially given the fact that every other running back in that backfield, a limited sample size for Achan, but like has had injury history in their past at the NFL level. So I think I like the upside play there. And Wright is a guy that a lot of people were really high on, you know, you relative to the rest of the class, which is fair. It's not like people were saying he's some elite running back prospect, but I get the case to be made for him.
I mean, I know that Erickson and Debro both dropped Achan to like RB15 or so in Dynasty. I didn't drop Achan at all.
Yeah. I know you've been really high on Achan, you know, from day one. So that's unsurprising. Let me give a quick recap here of round two. Jonathan Brooks, Trey Benson, Xavier Leggett, Bo Nix, Ricky Pearsall, Michael Penix Jr., Blake Corum, Adonai Mitchell, Jermaine Burton, Roman Wilson, Troy Franklin, Jalen Wright. 301 Fitz, you are on the clock. We'll go a little faster here, round three, because we've taken a lot of time in the first two rounds already.
Yeah, I'll take Marshawn Lloyd. No immediate path to playing time. Well, maybe not. I mean, I think he could possibly pass up A.J. Dillon on the Packers depth chart. But, you know, he was Debro's favorite back in this class. He was Daniel Jeremiah's favorite class back in this class. So and the Packers could conceivably walk away from Josh Jacobs after only 1 year. So maybe there's a possibility that Marshawn Lloyd is their featured back in 2025.
That was going to be my pick as well. Didn't love the landing spot, but I really love the player. So I think getting him in the third round is a nice find there. So since you took the player I wanted, I'm going to go against the great Thor Nystrom, and I'm going to take Jalen Polk. I mean, the draft capital is quite good, an early second round pick and a clear opportunity for targets from a talented quarterback when Drake May gets on the field. I know that the other guy who was drafted by the Patriots will probably go in this mock, and some people like even better than Polk, but I think Polk does a lot of things well. I think he fits well with what Drake May does. And again, the opportunity is there. The draft capital is there. So early in the third round, I'm happy to take Polk. And before I move on from that, I do want to get your opinion, Erickson, because this is a guy that a lot of the other guys on our staff don't like at all.
Yeah, when the Patriots initially made the pick, I wasn't happy about it because I felt like they were taking a safer player. But when I look at the infrastructure and kind of what the Patriots receivers have been in, historically, in the second round, they've just taken major swings at like making terrible bets. So I'm okay with them like trying to hit a double. Like for the first time, like in the second round, like let's just get a guy that's not going to be like a major bust. So is he going to be the best receiver on the Patriots? I don't think so. But is he going to be useful in the offense and help Drake May? I think so. So that's why, and you know, as I thought about it more, I liked the pick. But as I kind of get into my pick here, I'm going to take the other receiver the Patriots drafted, Javon Baker, who I think has more of the upside to be the number one receiver on this team. Like he can play on the outside. I just think that he's the dog in his offense. Like he's already, some of the quotes that he's been saying after he got drafted as like a fourth round pick are just absolutely hilarious. He's creating acts of God. He's making people in wheelchairs stand up. He said that his mentality when he looks across the line of scrimmage is to kill the other person. Like this is the attitude and edge that the Patriots need so badly at wide receiver. They've never had a receiver like this. All the guys they've drafted highly just soft, like didn't have that edge to them. And this guy, he gives off the Amon-Ra St. Brown where he's literally written down all the guys that got drafted ahead of him, including Jalen Polk. Like, so he's a man on a mission, and I think that he is going to be the best receiver on the Patriots this year.
Fitz, am I giving too much credence to draft capital taking Polk over Baker?
I mean, I did have Baker ranked ahead of Polk pre-draft, and now I consider it neck and neck, I guess.
Who are you taking at 204?
Malachi Corley. And I know he is a certain type of receiver and not the type for everyone. He's just a catch and run guy. He's built like a running back, you know, like not a contested catch guy, not necessarily a route running guy, but put the ball in his hands and he is really hard to tackle. And that's worked well for Debo Samuel. I know that comparison has gotten thrown around and Thor Nystrom thinks he is more comparable to Amari Rodgers, which is not what we want. But like this archetype of the catch and run guy can work. Like Debo made it work. Rashee Rice made it work for the Chiefs last year. And Corley's pretty good at it. I mean, I saw him light up Ohio State last fall, so I was pretty impressed.
I am going to finally take the next tight end off the board and take Debra's guy, Ben Sinnott, out of Kansas State. Sinnott? I forget how it's pronounced, actually.
Sinnott.
Ben Sinnott, I will take. When I said Sinnott, I was like, that sounds like it's not right. Ben Sinnott out of Kansas State. Second tight end off the board. Debra has been, you know, kind of praising him for, you know, a while here at the back half of draft season, and goes to a landing spot where there's opportunity to get on the field as a tight end. Obviously, a young quarterback there as well. So I will take Sinnott, you know, mid third round pick. I'm happy to get a guy who's got some real upside as the second best tight end in the class. Erickson, 306, you're on the clock.
I'm going to go with Jalen McMillan, the other Washington Huskies receiver that got drafted by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Look, I think this year he can start in the slot for them. You know, Chris Godwin is a free agent after this year. Mike Evans is over 30 years old. So, look, I think that he's a good player. And as in the, what gets lost in like the Polk slander is McMillan was really productive for this team with competing for targets with Polk and with Roma Dunze. So one of these guys, either Polk or McMillan, is going to severely do or produce much more than they did at Washington, because I think all these guys were kind of eating into each other a little bit. So it's just a matter of, okay, was it Polk? Was it McMillan? Who was better? If you ask Thor, it was McMillan. But last year it was Polk for most of the season. So I think that's good to take shots on both these guys, especially in round three, because like kind of that teammate effect where the Ohio State guys, you know, they necessarily didn't put up the biggest numbers because they're competing with each other. Same thing with the LSU receivers. So McMillan's the pick for me.
Fitz, you are up with the 207.
I'm going to take Luke McCaffrey, Washington Commanders, final day two pick. And he is a freak athlete. He's only had a couple of years playing wide receiver in college. He started his college career as a quarterback, but great athlete. Great bloodlines, obviously, the brother of Christian, son of Ed. So, I think he's going to grow nicely with Jaden Daniels and become a pass catching force for the Commanders before long.
All right. I am going to take a guy who slid quite a ways in the real draft, but I see a path to a starting NFL quarterback, and that's Spencer Rattler. There were a lot of landing spots he could have gone to as a, you know, late or mid day three pick, where I would have kind of written him off entirely. I don't see any reason why he couldn't overtake Derek Carr as the starting quarterback in New Orleans. He's obviously super talented, just a pure like arm talent and ability. I don't care about any of these, like, oh, when he was in high school, he was immature. It's very apparent that he has matured a lot in the time since then, particularly at South Carolina. He played behind one of the worst offensive lines in college football the last couple of years. So I'm not going to like put too much stock into his actual counting stats and what we saw out of him in that offense. There's talent. There's a path to potentially being a starting quarterback. It is a super flex. So I will take the swing on Spencer Rattler. And as the last quarterback, I assume that will get drafted here in our mock. I want to ask you guys, one QB, are you drafting Rattler at all, Fitz?
Maybe in the fifth round, if it's a 5-round draft.
I think that's kind of reasonable. Erickson, same thing.
Only if I have Derek Carr on my roster already.
Yeah, that's
the ultimate hedge.
I hope everybody listening does not have Derek Carr in a one quarterback dynasty league, because that would be best of luck. All right, let's get to the next pick here. Erickson, you're on the clock at 309.
I'm going to go with my RB5 in this class, because this is a very lackluster running back class. Tyrone Tracy for the New York Giants. Look, this is just a bet on he's going to one of the weakest depth charts at running back. Devin Singletary is the starting running back there, but we've seen Devin Singletary get replaced and not necessarily be a featured back. We've also seen him be featured back. So I don't know what his upside is, but Tyrone Tracy, 1 year at running back at Purdue after switching from wide receiver, and he led the entire class in yards after contact per attempt. So Brian Daboll talked about how they're going to use him in a bunch of different ways. They're going to kind of throw him into the mix and kind of see what happens. And that's what I'm going to do with my third round rookie pick, because the fact that he doesn't have a lot of experience at running back means he could literally never see the field. And then it's like, whatever, I just move on. Or he's a super explosive running back and athlete that, let's say, Devin Singletary flounders with the starting running back role, Tracy could have a big role in 2024.
Fitz, you just snaked me on the guy that I was about to take. I can see it in the sheet already. So go ahead and share that pick with everyone at 310.
Kamani Vidal, sixth round draft pick of the Los Angeles Chargers. And I know the hit rate on sixth round running backs is not great, but I think we can agree that the Chargers were one of the most desirable landing spots for a rookie running back. This is a team that's going to run a lot with Greg Roman calling the plays. They've got the one-dimensional Gus Edwards and the oft-injured J.K. Dobbins in front of him on the depth chart. I see Vidal playing right away. Three down skill set. Thorin Debro, those guys know I was excited when he ran a 4.47 at the combine. Like, I thought he was going to run like a 4.6 or something. I didn't think he was fast. And this guy's Troy University's all-time leading rusher. Like, he was really productive in college. I think he's going to be a nice fit for the Chargers, even though they, you know, took their own sweet time drafting him when they needed a running back. But I love the player team marriage here.
I love that pick. I will be very excited if I can get him at the 310 and in any of my rookie drafts this year. I think there's real upside there. I'm going to take with the 11th pick in the third round, Devontae Walker, not just because he's a Raven. I think there's a real path, first of all, to targets in this offense. It was kind of under-discussed, I thought, behind their offensive line need, that the Ravens had a real wide receiver need going into this offseason that they didn't really address when they signed Deontay Hardy. That's more as a returner role. So I think Walker will have an opportunity if he's good. And this is somebody who was talked about as like maybe even a late first round pick going into the college football season. Clearly didn't pan out that way. He was kind of jerked around by the NCAA. He had a lot of family stuff that he was dealing with. He's a great kid, a talented player who I think if he can focus on football full time, like he'll be able to do in what is a great organization in Baltimore. I think there's real upside here. So at this point in the draft, I'm really happy to take a swing on that where there's opportunity and talent, early day three pick. So I will take Tez Walker, and then Erickson wrap us up here with the final pick of the third round.
We go with Isaac Garendo, running back for the 49ers. I mean, look, Caffrey, a lot of touches. Elijah Mitchell made a glass. So Isaac Garendo is the rare running back that Shanahan decides to draft that's not just has the speed, but actually has size. Usually Shanahan just drafts a lot of these faster guys in the later rounds. But Garendo at 220 or over 220 pounds, like, this guy can fly at a big size. So a couple guys go down. Garendo is going to be in your starting lineup sooner rather than later.
I just want to let everybody know quickly, the Fantasy Pros Championship at FFPC is on. Fantasy Pros Championship drafts fast and slow are already live. A $350 entry fee. You can go to fantasypros.com/FFPC and use promo code FantasyPros on sign up for $25 off your first entry. There is a $1 million first place prize. The world's largest online season-long tournament is on. And for the early bird discount, register by June 15th and draft your team by June 30th to receive a free $35 team credit. Guys, before we wrap up quickly, any names that didn't get drafted that you think are worth mentioning? Obviously, only two tight ends went off the board. There's still wide receivers. I love Malik Washington, although he fell pretty far, so I see why he wouldn't go here. Lots of running backs, Rasheen Ali. I could list about eight of them, so I won't do that, but just a couple, like Rasheen Ali, Audric Estime, I loved until draft day when he fell. Ray Davis, Braylon Allen, Fitz's guy, Bucky Irving. Any of these names stand out that are worth kind of hitting on here, Fitz?
Yeah, Ray Davis, I almost took him instead of Vidal. I think there's a case to be made that he's going to play right away in Buffalo because James Cook is a little undersized. He could use a tag team partner. And I don't know. Like, the Jets just destroyed the value of multiple running backs in this draft. Braylon Allen, Isaiah Davis, like, all to just sit there and collect cobwebs behind Breece Hall. I mean, because, it was Braylon Allen who kept Isaac Garendo on the bench in Madison for a couple of years. And now it's going to be someone else keeping Braylon Allen on the bench.
What do you think, Erickson? Any names you want to hit on before we get out of here?
I mean, Bazooka Joe Milton, quarterback for the Patriots. I think it's worth the dart throw in some of these really deep super flex drafts, just because, I mean, they asked him about switching positions. He's like, I'm never switching from quarterback. Like, I'm going to be the quarterback of the future. So whether it's Drake May or Joe Milton, the Patriots have their franchise quarterback on their roster.
All right, we will get out of here on some Joe Milton hype. Don't forget, everybody, that all of our early 2024 consensus rankings and tiers, including for rookies and dynasty drafts, that can be found at fantasypros.com/rankings. For Erickson and Fitz, I am Ryan Warmley. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll see you again next time. Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Fantasy Football Podcast. If you love the show, the best free way to support us is by leaving a positive review on Apple Podcasts at fantasypros.com/review or on Spotify. Follow us on X, Instagram, and TikTok at Fantasy Pros, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.